Hey everybody, welcome to Table Noise Podcast. This is Bradley Haltom. Welcome to episode 4. Episode 4, we interviewed Jordan Waliba, who's been a comedian for a long time and has been a friend to me ever since I decided I wanted to start telling jokes. It was a real delight to speak to her. We talked about punk rock, and I've actually been feeling kind of nostalgic and been listening to Dead Milkmen and Dead Kennedys and all that shit recently. It's been fun. Man, I miss that mentality, that punk rock mentality of when you're a teenager and everything's doesn't matter. Nothing matters. Just experiencing the world matters. And now it's so much different. Yeah, I have 3 kids of my own, and you know, I hope that they get to have that same enjoyment out of their teenage years where just fuck it. Nothing matters. Just experience the world, man. Learn and grow and become an adult. So it was a good conversation. You know, we talked to her about her change into womanhood and just, man, it was cool. It was really fun. It was enlightening. Please follow me on Twitter at Bradley Haltom, and that's BradleyHaltom as in Mary. And also, please find me on Facebook, comedian Bradley Haltom on Facebook, and that way we can keep in touch, you fucking beautiful person, you. Also, please find us on iTunes. You can find us at the iTunes store. Just look for Table Noise Podcast and subscribe, and please tell your friends, and it'll be a good time. And please enjoy this podcast. It was a lot of fun to record and very informative, and I really hope that you enjoy it as well. Here it goes. Table Noise Podcast, Episode 4. Jordan Waliba, Punk Rock Girl. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Table Noise Podcast. My name is Bradley Haltom. I'm your host, and I'm here with my co-host, Micah Carmack.
Yo.
And we are at the Fundy House, and we are sitting here with local comedian Jordan Waliba.
Hi. It's Jordan. Everybody.
Jordan decided to come and hang out with us, and I wanted to talk to her. Because she totally falls into what we've been doing as far as like talking to just kind of people with interesting backgrounds, people that you wouldn't probably normally get to talk to if you're just walking down the street. Hi, Jordan. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks
and
for
how
coming.
Are you, Micah?
Oh, fantastic.
Great.
It's a good day.
Fantastic.
It is a good day. It's sunny.
It's warm.
It's warm.
It's not snowing today.
This is about the time of year where I start just staying inside.
Yeah, right?
The sunshine's not good for me.
It's nice, but I don't have to go outside. But I could.
Yeah. Spring in Denver is a fickle, fickle bitch and loves to shit in our faces every now and again when we get our hopes up about 70-degree days.
What, 4 days ago it snowed 6 inches or something?
Oh, yeah.
Like that?
Oh, it's coming
and it was
Monday.
Blizzarding?
It's coming Monday.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, we get more snow again on Monday.
Are you kidding me? I didn't even see that.
Yeah. At least we're having sunny weekends.
I just put my jacket in my closet, too.
Well, should not. Should keep that out until June.
Keep that parka out. I do like how it kind of stifles the bug population when they're getting a little bit. Like, I see one too many moths or fire ants, and a big snow comes through, and it's like, haha, retribution for another couple of weeks. I'll have to deal with you flying fuckheads.
Yeah, this is the time of year where it starts feeling like I have glass in my eyes. It's not fun. You grew up here, right?
Born and raised. Born and raised.
Where'd you go to high school?
Cherry Creek High School.
Ooh.
Boop, boop.
Yep.
I went to George Washington.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not. It was great. It
How many
was
times
really great.
Did you get shot?
None. I was friends with all the gang members.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I was like that guy that, I had like a core group of friends, you know, that I would go and hang out with. We just hung out by the tree on the grounds.
There's one
and
tree.
And it was pretty, there was one really nice tree.
Oh, good.
And we claimed it for ourselves. I used to take naps under it when I was ditching class.
Nice.
And we would all hang out there, and it was pretty much
kind of a group of misfits, you know, a bunch of punk rockers and stoners and that crew. But I was the guy that within that group would like go and hang out with all of like the Crips and the Bloods, because I grew up in Montbello and rode RTD with all those guys and went to middle school with most of them. And so, yeah, I was never an issue for me.
Did they call you?
Kind of friends with everybody.
Did they call you B. Holtz?
They call me Opie.
Opie.
I see that. Because of my gingerification.
Nice. So you probably hang out with the Bloods more than ginger. I think that was stupid. That was
no,
stupid
I hung
joke.
Out with the...
right? Not the worst one made on this show.
Nope. If you listen, never mind. I hung out with mostly the Crips because my uncle was a Crip.
Oh snap!
Learn how to crip walk. So and there's some.
I can see walks. Yeah. I can do that. I can do a little
see
walk.
See you do it.
Nice.
It earns you mad respect.
Just amongst white people. Black people think it's hilarious because I don't do it right. White people are like, "That's impressive."
That guy's hard.
So growing up in kind of like your teenage years, first of all, Jordan, you would identify yourself as transgender, correct?
Correct.
Get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Because like I'm going to ask you about that because that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, transgender.
Tell me about that. Like when did you kind of realize that was going on? Because that's something for me. I have gay dads.
Yeah.
Right, and so I'm very friendly and familiar with kind of the LGBT culture. There's a Q in there now?
There's more than just
is
a
that,
Q.
Is that a question mark? It's like, I don't know.
It's LGBTQ plus, and there's some other ones. I don't know. It changes like monthly.
You should just call it everyone.
Yeah, everyone who's not straight.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I didn't realize until recently that there's so many variations within sexuality.
Oh, absolutely.
And that I always thought for a long time growing up that it was like straight and gay. Uh-huh. That was it.
And some people still think that too.
That's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is that I think myself, I'm ignorant. You know what I mean? And I come from a very colorful background where I'm exposed to all of these things, but I didn't know until I was probably 16 that there was people that were born one gender but didn't identify that they were that gender. When did you realize that was going on?
It's hard to put it to a certain year. I always knew that I was born in the wrong gender ever since I was in kindergarten, but I didn't know it was something I could do about it until probably right before I started hitting puberty. I learned what transgender is, and I started seeing it in the media, and then I started researching it, and I always had in the back of my head, this is something I want to do, but the reason it took me so long is because I was petrified to do it. It's very negatively portrayed in the media. Not very often will you see it in a positive light. It's always, you know, people are making jokes about it, or they're like prostitutes or whatever. Yeah. They're on like Springer or Maury, and they're like, hey, I was born a man, and their date flips out or whatever. And it's always been bad up until very, very recently. So that kind of fear kept me in for so long, but you can only keep that in for until you go insane. You either or decide you're going to be depressed for the rest of your life and live a lie, or you're just going to go for it and be yourself.
Right.
Which, thankfully, I did earlier than most trans people I know.
Which is good. I mean, because you'll still get to experience, you know, being young. And,
yes.
And being the gender that you that you feel was what you were supposed to be all along.
I wish I would have done it younger, but
that concept, to be totally honest, makes no sense to me.
What concept?
And I'm not like denying, you know, that there's legitimacy to it at all. But the concept of being born with one set of genitals, but feeling that inside you should have been born with the other set, like just and I only say that because I'm honestly ignorant, you know, and I just don't understand how that would feel, nor could I fathom how that would feel, and I don't think that anybody rightfully could.
It's hard to explain how you feel. I would compare it to wearing a very uncomfortable sweater for 32 years. By that 32nd year, that sweater is ready to come off.
Yeah.
And you you take it off, and you are very happy you did it.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, that totally makes sense. I mean, I think to a smaller degree, you know, each and every one of us has been there at some point in our lives where we feel like there's something about us or, you know, there's something about our situation that we'd like to change, and it doesn't feel right, you know. I for a long time, not to cheapen anybody else's experience, but for a long time I didn't like my hair color, so I wanted it to be, I wanted to be jet black, you know, like the popular kid in school, and I felt like, you know, your environment and what people have to say and their opinions do affect a lot about, you know, how you feel about yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, and that I was raised as a God-fearing Christian, you know, Catholic, you know, little boy. And what I came away from that with, which I guess I'm lucky, you know, when you think about it, is the lessons that kind of dictate how I feel about anybody else's personal shit is I don't care. Yeah. I honestly don't care. Because the only thing, there's two types of people in this world. People who are dickbags and people who are pretty cool.
Right.
I mean, that's honestly the only two categories I have for judging a human being. So, yeah, it has never made sense that, you know, people have this uncomfortable nature towards things that they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It just, it's got to be hard. I mean, what do you think, at what age do you think it was, like, the hardest to kind of deal with that?
When I started puberty, definitely, that was not, I did not like puberty at all. I did not want my voice to get deeper. I did not want to get hair in strange places, and that's when all the boys were going after girls, and I followed them because I didn't want, you know, to get made fun of or beat up. And so, yeah, puberty was horrible, but I learned how to deal with it through a lot of weed and beer.
That's the coping mechanism for everybody at this table.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So did you then, during that kind of that period, did you identify as a homosexual male?
No. It's hard when you feel like you're born in the wrong gender and trying to identify as homosexual, because I don't consider myself homosexual. Mm-hmm. I consider myself a woman, and I like men.
Yeah, I mean, was there any sexual component to, I mean, any of your decision making? I mean, as far as, you know, lifestyle and who you wanted to be with, or was it completely a feeling of, like, not feeling like a man, but feeling like a woman?
Exactly. I never felt like a man. I only acted like it. And that's why I was with women, but I never enjoyed it, which made fucking very awkward
I bet.
For a lot of women.
I was talking...
Talk to my first couple of girlfriends.
Right. And mine.
I was talking to my wife about that. And because my dad grew up sexually repressed, you know, in kind of a narrow-minded... that was very rude. Table noise.
That was my butthole.
So disclaimer for table noise is there will be table noise, and I do my best to go through, like, post recording and try and edit out as much as, like, just the table noise that there is.
You can't police this.
No, you can't. This is table noise. Yeah. So there will be table noise, and I apologize for the recording quality. That's just how it is and how it's going to be. I was talking about table noise. Table noise?
We need a count.
That's what we call it, right? Table noise? Let's see if we can hit 100. I was talking to my wife about, you know, kind of my dad and him growing up.
Uh-huh.
And just, like, trying to identify... I was really high. And I was trying to identify kind of where he was coming from growing up. And him making me and my brother with a woman had to have been one of the most psychologically traumatizing events.
That's repression. That's
got to be really, really fucking difficult.
Oh yeah.
And that would be like me having sex with men because society tells me to, even though every time I go to do it, I want to vomit and I hate myself while I'm doing it.
Yep.
And then, like, if homosexual couples were able to make a child through intercourse,
mm-hmm.
then to have a little reminder of my repressed sexuality running around. Oh, and, yeah. and trying to love that person anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's gotta really fuck with your head.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it does. Thankfully, I never got to the point where I had kids.
Yeah.
But I was married to a woman, which was a bad mistake.
Did you just kind of like go along with it, and then that was kind of the natural progression?
I went along with it. I got married at 27, and at the time it felt like the thing you're supposed to do at 27. I was right. in no position to get married. I had just gotten out of college, where I met my ex-wife, and you know, I didn't have a job, she didn't have a job, and it just it failed on all counts because we weren't, I wouldn't say we were in love with each other, but we were in love with the idea of each other.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
So, did you feel obligated to seek out a relationship with a person of the opposite sex? I mean, was that...
I did.
How does that, I mean, play into your relationship, though? I mean, that's got to, like, from the get-go, put a huge strain on anything real you're trying to build with a person, right?
Yeah, it did, but I was in a position at the time where I had just quit my band, where all my friends were. I had been in an abusive relationship with a girl for 3 years before then, and once I quit the band and broke up with her, I was trying to start over, and I had planned to come out. Then I started going to college. I didn't know anybody. I didn't talk to anybody. And I started expressing myself more. And then I started getting new friends and fell back into the same situation where they were, you know, making homophobic jokes and stuff like that. And I didn't want to lose my new friends because friendship is a very supportive network for me.
Yeah.
I hate being alone. And I rolled with them for a while, and I did not want to get with any girl until one day we started hanging out with one, and my friends were like, hey, she really likes you, you should go for it. I said, okay, whatever, and, you know, we started dating, and then one night I went to my cousin's wedding, and I caught the garter belt. So I texted my ex-wife, and I said, hey, I caught the garter belt, we have to get married now, LOL. She's like, okay.
Oh, oops.
And then a year later...
Texts are dangerous.
Yeah, that was... I was drunk. And a year later, you know, we got married.
Oh, and fuck. Did you guys go through, like, the whole planning process and everything?
Oh, yeah. Oh God, Jesus. Yeah. And, you know, she got to live out her fantasy of, you know, every little girl's fantasy of making, you know, a whole big spectacle wedding. And it was all mm-hmm. about her that day, which I'm sure you've heard my joke where when she was... coming down the aisle, the only thing I could think of was, why does she get to wear the dress?
So on her part, how much obliviousness was involved, or was she, you know, completely?
She was oblivious. She had no idea. Like, I mean, wow. The only time she might have caught an inkling is when she watched like Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and I didn't complain. I was like, so, yeah, you want to watch Zoe? That's cool. That's a cute shoes.
So it was that due to, you know, you're living a life of disguise and basically portraying yourself as a certain type and style your entire life and just perpetuating that?
Yeah, I was used to it. I mean, I'd been doing it for so long. I was used to living a lie no matter how much I hated it. Mm-hmm. I felt that's what I should do, but it was, I didn't want to get rejected from my friends or my family or anything like that, so I went with it, and then it just, I couldn't do it anymore. And I think the clincher was, she had no idea. And then one day she asked for a divorce. Like, I didn't say anything about I'm transgender to her. She was like, I'm not happy, I haven't been happy for a while, I want a divorce. A week later, I was in therapy for people who specialize in gender dysphoria, and then 2 months later I came out, and it's all downhill from there.
Well, I mean, that's strong. I mean, downhill, I mean, didn't you feel any sense of relief Or was it all too terrifying at first?
It was petrifying at first. Like, the first person I came out to, it was one of the nicest, most genuine people I know. And so I felt that I should come out to him first, and I did, and I was a little liberated, but he hangs out with all the people that I knew, and so I was afraid he'd tell people. And then I think I came out to my parents shortly after, which was horrible. I was so, so nervous.
Didn't go well, huh?
No, it actually went pretty well for the most part. I was like, I was actually pretty sick at the time, but I had told my mom like a week or two before. I was like, okay, we're going to meet on this day at this place, and I have to tell you something really, really important. And at first she was like, oh my God, you're going to get married again, aren't you? So, no, it's not. And then I wound up getting really sick, but I didn't want to put it off any longer. So I met him, and I came out, and my mom was really, she wasn't surprised. She said, you know, I kind of knew. My dad was really thrown off. He's like a kind of a right wing guy and big, like, manly man, played a lot of sports. So he was none too pleased because I'm the only boy in our family, or was the only boy in our family. So, but they're cool now. They're completely supportive.
Well, that's good. That's great. I mean, what was the change with your dad immediate?
I wouldn't say immediate. He still kind of struggles with it. Like, he's terrible at pronouns, which makes for awkward situations at restaurants. But I mean, he's fine with it.
Does it frustrate you when? Because I hear, like, just talking with you casually, right? Like, we'll be hanging out with other comics, and sometimes comics refer to you using a gender specific pronoun. You know, him, or does that bother you?
It does bother me, but I let it slide.
Yeah,
because you know I understand it's hard to get used to knowing somebody for that long, and then automatically having to switch your brain to something that you shouldn't have to think about anyways.
Sure.
Which I completely understand, but I mean, you know, I've been out for almost 2 years now, and
right
now it's getting a little frustrating.
Well, and I met you right before you started going. I think it was really shortly after you came out.
Probably, yeah.
And so it was kind of easy for me. It's just always
The people that I met girl, like, you know? Right when that happened have no problem with it, but there's a few people that still struggle with it. And, you know, occasionally they'll say, call me, like, dude or man or something like that. And I say, dude is fine, just don't call me man. They're like, oh, no, that's how I call everybody. Like, hey, what's up, dude? Hey, man. I was like, okay, use that excuse. But
at least you were fortunate enough to be given an androgynous name.
A lot of people are like, are you changing your name? I was like, nope, I don't have to.
Nope, you're lucky.
So I can avoid a lot of legal hassles.
You don't have to name yourself.
No.
Like it's done.
Like no, thank God, just yeah.
Be Jordan.
Yep. That's who I am.
When, so you were, which band were you in?
I was in a bunch of bands, but the one I was in for the longest was called Fourth Year Freshman.
I've heard of Fourth Year Freshman.
That does
totally. I think I've seen you guys perform.
Probably.
When I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Yeah. You guys were actually, yeah. And when I was in high school, it was a name that went around.
That was like the local them and Less Than Jake. It was Fourth Year Freshman and Less Than Jake. Wow. We're like kind of the synonymous names.
Yeah, 93.3
in the punk
guys.
In the punk scene.
That's ironic because I worked for 93.3 for a time, and I don't think they knew who the fuck I was. Do you know who I am? I'm Stag, motherfucker. I wrote half our fucking songs.
Did you like being in a punk band?
Oh, I loved it. Being in bands and playing music and touring all over the country and just not giving a fuck was the best times of my life. I didn't go to college. I spent my early 20s drinking and just going everywhere I could and annoying people with loud, abrasive music.
I loved the chaos behind punk rock.
Oh, I love punk rock.
I wish it still existed.
It's intoxicating. Like,
it's
totally silly, but it's totally just, you know, what you need as a teenager.
Oh, yeah. It's all about rebellion and pissing people off and drinking and having a good time and just not caring about what anybody thinks.
But at the same time, kind of trying to be socially responsible.
Yeah,
which was kind of a weird aspect of the punk kinda, rock scene.
Yeah, there's a few people who are, you know, trying to make a difference, but when you have a 4-foot pink mohawk, it's kind of hard for people to take you seriously.
I know, it imbues you with this, like, totally false sense of righteousness.
Oh, yeah.
I just started paying attention to world politics 2 months ago, and God damn it, I'm angry.
Yeah. I can't believe this is happening. Oh, yeah, there's so many ridiculous people in the punk rock scene, but I didn't give a fuck.
What say you in what people say that punk rock is dead? Do you feel that?
It depends on what you mean by dead. I mean, there's probably still
depends on what you mean by punk rock.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I don't know. I always thought punk rock was a fashion.
Yeah.
I never really thought it was a social thing or whatever. There are people who would probably stab me with safety pins for saying that, but when you look at it, it started out as a fashion, like in New York in the late 70s with bands like the Ramones and all those guys. They were rock and roll. Yeah. They were called rock and roll until Malcolm McLaurin in England saw the Sex Pistols, or before they were the Sex Pistols, liked how they dressed, manufactured that band, and came up with the phrase punk rock, and then that spread over to the United States, and everything kind of focused around that. It's like, it's a new style of music.
It certainly had an agenda, you know? Certainly had this air of, like, we're more trying to make a statement than we are trying to compose, you know, poetry for future generations to fucking
enjoy. There's so many punk bands that just suck. Like, Circle Jerks suck. Black Flag sucks. But I love them.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Like, Black Flag is difficult to listen to, but God damn it, I love listening to it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they date themselves so well. I mean, they're icons of their era. And granted, those eras could be 2 to 3 years long. But, I mean, you know, the Dead Kennedys had an effect only at that time, really. Because what they're talking about is the Reagan administration. What they're talking about is, you know, Cambodia. You know, it's like, it's not as far reaching, but it does have an impact, and I think that's what it's meant for.
It certainly came at the right time.
Yeah, I just, it doesn't feel like we have that really now anymore.
No, it doesn't. Like, I mean, I guess the most out there in music would probably be like dubstep or whatever.
Well, what kind of message is that sending to the kids?
It means you don't have to learn an instrument to be a musician.
Pretty much.
I can appreciate, you know, you sitting with a little plastic box in your room going wub, 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 wub for 15 hours a day. Really learning your craft, but it seems to lack soul, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you didn't necessarily have to learn an instrument to play punk rock either.
That's the
truth. You just had to learn how to play it fast.
Fast and loud. Fast and
loud. You get those 5 chords down. Well, five. I'm being generous. There's 3 chords down, and you're off to the races.
Yeah, you learn a bar chord in your set. Yeah.
You better hope to God you have a good drummer.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely.
With a lot of stamina.
And that was actually the downfall of a lot of those bands that I used to like, you know, very much. The Misfits were a prime example of a band that fell too short just because their drumming was off.
Yeah, and they're dicks, too.
Well, yeah.
If they ever listen to this podcast, which I hope they don't. But.
Well, yeah, you don't want to piss off Jerry Only.
Yeah, right?
No, you don't. And I've seen him mad. He is not happy to be around with mad.
He just seems cranky. Like, he seems harmless. He just seems kind of grumpy.
Well, he wished us happy Thanksgiving last time I saw him. So.
Oh my God, I met up with him on the East Coast when they were touring with Agnostic Front. A friend of mine was a roadie for Agnostic Front, and Jerry used to lift weights in the parking lot before each set.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
And he got all pissed off if nobody lifted weights with him. And I had stayed way clear. Those guys, they're scary. All the hardcore big guys scared the hell out of me.
Well, what do you think about this? Glenn Danzig is getting back together for another tour with the Misfits, and they're going to be coming to Denver soon.
Yeah, I saw that.
I want to go.
I'd
be interested in going. I got to
I'll
admit,
go see him. Yep.
It's going
to
be sad.
I went to the Sex Pistols reunion, and sad. I'll go to the Misfits reunion.
I saw Boston. Like 4 years ago, it was one of the saddest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
To see all these mid-50s musical acts
is that
just
more than
panting
feeling?
On stage. What?
Is that more than a feeling? Is that what I'm remembering?
Yeah. Well, and I went and saw Styx and Peter Frampton.
Oh, I saw Styx.
And that was horrible.
It was good because we are, you know, we got to say, hey, we saw Sticks and Peter Frampton. Right. My God.
Yeah. Right. That's, yeah.
Our parents got to say that. Uh-huh. Now, if they're like passing the torch to us.
Exactly. Right. I went to Saw Sticks to say I saw Sticks, but they didn't play Mr. Roboto and they got on my Excess of Evil.
Yeah, that's.
And now I don't like Sticks.
Yeah. I mean, the band. You got to make it onto your shit list if a band's not going to play either one of two popular songs.
Yeah,
well, it's like 30 years later. How many of these songs do you really think that the people that are here at this concert know? Like, we know Roboto.
Mr. Roboto, Come Sail Away.
Yep.
And that's pretty much
that's
it.
That's about it.
And they played Come Sail Away. They just didn't play Mr. Roboto, and I didn't care what the hell other songs. Thankfully, Def Leppard was on the bill, too. And that was good.
I love Peter Frampton and like his commitment to that same set he's been peddling for 40 plus years.
Yeah. at least he knows to play the hits.
Wow, 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 wow. You know, and you're like, I wonder how many times he's done that and why he hasn't shot himself in the head yet.
Make some money.
I guess.
If I got paid that much to tell the same damn jokes, I'd do it.
You know what the saddest concert I've ever been to? It was in a park in Littleton. And it was Eddie Money.
Oh, no.
And it was sad, you guys. It was really, really bad. He is like some sort of elderly Jerry. Like, he just shuffles around the stage. He is just, like, his nostrils are flared out from all the coke he's done.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, my God. And, like, it's just a crowd of like rednecks who brought their kids and just got off the tilt-a-whirl and sitting down in some cotton candy after Eddie Money.
Yeah,
sing two tickets to paradise.
That's what I heard from the stage.
Oh, man.
Eddie Money's like a Muppet, all googly-eyed and leathery.
That's gotta be a weird evolution to your life of like being really famous as a musical act or something along those lines, and then trying desperately to hold on to that without any sort of artistic endeavor.
Burning out.
It's sad. I've seen bands I've seen at in arenas and stadiums, and then 10 years later they're playing at little shit clubs that I've played at.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Like when I saw Smashing Pumpkins at like McNichols Arena. And then they played at the Ogden. I was like, that sucks. You should have changed out of that Zero shirt.
Well, no, it's a tattoo. Like, it's not... Oh. He's not actually wearing a shirt. It's just he tattooed the Zero shirt on his upper body.
Smart.
Well, I think he realized that jumping the ship to born-again Christianity wasn't paying the bills like, you know, Bullet with Butterfly Wings used to.
Yeah.
And it's a sad thing to have somebody try and return to that, but it's like you're playing off our nostalgia, and we'll give you one chance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you better bring it.
I'll only go see bands now for the nostalgic purpose. I don't know what the hell is popular these days. I don't like any new bands. Everything I listen to is from the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
I have a hard time listening to new music that comes out, unless it's a really great band, like Queens of the Stone Age is working on a new album. Uh-huh. And I'm really excited to listen to it.
That sounds
And Foo Fighters came out with a new album not that long ago, and I really loved it.
Uh-huh.
And but for the most part, like, new artists come out, and I just don't
can't get
care.
Into them. There's a few artists that I like, but I'll only like one or two of their songs. Like, I'm not going to go out and buy the album and get super excited about it.
And it makes me feel so old.
Yeah.
I feel like my parents.
Dude, Alice in Chains was on a fucking classic rock station the other day.
Oh, my God.
I was like,
I can't listen to classic rock.
No.
Because I already did.
Yeah, well, we all do listen to classic rock now. And the stuff that we used to listen to that wasn't the classic rock station has now been set out to pasture and is on the oldies station.
Oh, yeah.
And Opiate from Tool would be considered classic rock.
I think I cried the first time I heard Nirvana on the classic rock station. That was so sad.
It's a weird thing getting old, but also being ultra aware of how old you are.
I know,
unfortunately for our parents, I don't think that's something that they had to experience.
It's so subtle and gradual for them. Like, we're being thrust into adulthood, and I'm still like clinging to my Nintendo and my, you know, like in my blankie. I'm like, no, I don't want to be a grown up. But you know, at some point, you gotta pay the mortgage.
Yep. You gotta turn off the fun and get to work.
That's exactly the moment punk rock dies, is when you realize, I fucking hate not being able to afford a car.
I'm not going
to
be able to get a job with this hair and these piercings and this 50-pound leather jacket in the middle of July.
Tokyo Joe's was my last option because I have a face tattoo and God damn it, no, now it's just, it's hopeless.
Oh yeah, exactly. I think punk rock died for me when I got fired from Hot Topic.
Punk rock died when you went to work at Hot Topic. Yeah.
Well, that was the 2 weeks before I got fired, so that's fine.
I'm not going to say there was ever a moment when Hot Topic was cool, but I do remember when they first opened and it was like, okay, all the weird people that might shoot the school up, like,
I might be able to get a job here with two different colored hairs.
I got rejected from Hot Topic. I tried to go work at Hot Topic and they wouldn't hire me.
Really?
I was like, but I'm punk rock. Oh, that's the problem. I'm punk rock.
Yeah.
I get it.
That's why I got fired. I got in trouble because I was intimidating the customers. I'm like, this is Hot Topic. Your foundation is scared customers.
No, you're supposed to move the studded belts.
Yeah. That I didn't know either. I just stood there. God. You can't do that. You have to work.
Yeah. Soulless corporatization of anything that we thought might have been cool. You know, that's, I mean, at some point everybody's going to get their hands on anything that is reasonably cool and try to make money off of it.
Hence,
I mean,
hence the Warped Tour started. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, hence any art form. I mean, that's why it really sticks out when you're doing it for, you know, the pure reasons. Like when you hear a band who's really good and they sound like they haven't been coached. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, like just, that raw energy.
God,
it's like the Black Keys.
No, they've been coached. Have you heard the first couple of albums? It was blues dog shit.
I like it.
The last couple of albums sound actually kind of polished because the producer got in there and said, "Hey, you guys, we're playing the same fucking four blues chords and make a hit already."
But it still has a raw sound to it.
It does. It's different. It's unique, and it's not so unique that it's, you know, you can't compare it against the shit that came from the 70s and 80s, but still, I mean, it's enough to juxtapose against what we have now. I mean,
exactly.
God damn it, Five Finger Death Punch, is that what you're bringing to the table? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm getting a
people
little
really
bit
like those guys.
They're nice guys.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it, but God, it's devoid of the poetry that is humanity. God damn it, I need some humanity in my music. I can appreciate a nice chugga chugga riff every now and again, but god damn it, put some fucking soul into what you're telling me. Don't just be like, yeah, fucking tattoos and god damn it, fucking rock and roll, man.
Is that their hit?
Yeah, tattoos, rock and roll. That's
that sounds about right.
Five Finger Death Punch.
That's everything on the hard rock stations out here.
I don't know. I have a complaint about every genre of music, but I also like every genre of music. So I'm
Exactly.
I'm a hypocrite.
I hate every genre of music, but I love every genre of music. It's awesome.
My gold standard is just like, just don't suck. Just do your shit, but do it well.
Oh yeah, exactly. I'll listen to everything from Slayer to Katy Perry. If I like it, I like it.
You know, one of the greatest songs ever written is a pop song, and that's Toxic by Britney Spears. But it's not by Britney Spears, and that's why it's so good.
Yeah.
Somebody wrote it for her. She just happened to sing on it.
Yeah.
And put it on her album, but it's a fucking amazing song. Mm-hmm. That's why I never really try to downplay pop music as much as I did when I was high school, because I appreciate the work that goes into it. I'm not a good musician, but I can at least fiddle around on a guitar, and I can appreciate what goes into writing a hit.
Oh yeah,
because it all makes sense psychologically. Like, you know, you get the right neurons firing. That's an art. That, granted, it's got millions of dollars backing it, but you know, it at some point it sounds good.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think that same mentality translates to stand up.
Totally.
I've noticed that my favorite stand ups and my favorite jokes, when I actually am able to write them, are the ones where they come from a pure place. They're not designed to get a laugh, a cheap laugh.
Oh yeah.
But they do. You know, people laugh at them, but I really feel like I'm saying something that's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually I was having a Luke Francis, who's a comic out of L.A., who, if he comes to town, you should go check him out because he's awesome. But he posed a question today on online of, was Bill Hicks a comedian?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the common sentiment. And his kind of justification, and you'd have to go to his website to read kind of his blog about it, but his justification was that he's not necessarily sure that Bill Hicks was a comedian because oftentimes people weren't laughing when Bill Hicks was talking. And people, because he was discussing, he was having a discussion, right? With himself, but he was having a discussion, and so a lot of it was political and social satire. And it wasn't kind of your basic formula of set up, punchline. And it was oftentimes just kind of funny, anecdotal type stuff tied to a political view.
That was more later in his career. When he first started out, he was a pretty...
Well, after he started doing drugs, then he started
you know, popping those mushrooms and shit like that and drinking.
He's a joke writer. He could write a joke.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. But in his craft, he found a way to tie it very closely to the truths that he found in his own reality. Now, I think the reason that he resonated with me was because those truths also, you know, kind of were linked to my reality. So when he didn't get a laugh, I didn't chalk that up to him not being funny or him not being a comedian. I chalked that up to an audience misunderstanding the point.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I consider him a comedian, but he also is a little bit more than a comedian. In the sense that Lenny Bruce was a comedian. Listen to Lenny Bruce. It's not terribly funny. The relationship it has from 1950s, you know, kind of comments on society and how things work versus today, they don't really translate very well. But it's all about what he did and what he stood for and the conversation that he forced you to have as an audience member.
Right.
Lenny Bruce is going down as one of the most influential and prolific comedians of his time. And I think Bill Hicks is the epitome of his generation's version of that.
Absolutely.
He's a comedian, 100%, because he could write a fucking joke like no one else. But at the same time, he went beyond that. So, I mean, that question that Luke poses, like, is he a comedian? Fuck yeah. And he's one of the greatest comedians that's ever lived because he does more than just make you laugh.
I pose the question of, what is the social responsibility of a comedian? Because to make you laugh.
That's everybody's goal. If you want to be a comedy, comedian.
That's the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the same time, oftentimes comedians are people who are in a position to be able to encourage critical thought. And I think that if you have the ability to do that in an articulate way and make it funny, you should do that.
But it's not required.
It's not required.
I think that's...
There's different styles, but it's not fair, I think, to say that unless you follow into this industry construct of your job is to make people laugh and only laugh, then you're not a comedian. I don't think that that's a fair assessment to make. Because if you look at guys like Greg Giraldo, he was constantly talking about political topics, but making it very funny.
Let me pose this question to you, Jordan. Do you think that you can be a comedian without being an artist?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think comedy is definitely an art form because with art you express yourself. And I truly don't think you can be a comedian until you learn that. Like, for the first 5 years of my career, I tried to be the cookie-cutter comic. You know, I wrote hack jokes. I tried every style under the sun. When I first started, Dane Cook was really popular, so I mimic his style. And actually, they brought that up in the Bill Hicks documentary. When comics first start out, they bite other comics' style. And so I tried, like, Dane Cook's style, and then that wasn't working. And then I tried, you know, like, I tried one-liners. I tried just wacky humor. I even tried playing guitar for a little while. Mm. And I got last, but it was nothing. Like, I never crushed an audience for, like, the first 5 years of my career. And then I came out, I was actually able to be myself. I was more comfortable on stage. I was more relaxed. I had something to say. I wanted to, you know, educate people on my lifestyle. And that's when I started noticing audience were being more responsive. And I noticed that every time I see a new comic, they do mimic other people's style. Like, I was at an open mic a few weeks ago, and there's a brand new comic up, was doing airline jokes.
Oh, man.
Which...
Is that still a thing?
Yeah, it was. He was like, have you ever been at an airport? I'm like, oh, here we go.
It's like, yes, thank you.
You know, I've done airport jokes.
I'm sure everybody has, yeah. I mean,
I'm not going to try and justify why I did it.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly. That's my point.
I did it because it was funny.
Everybody has done every kind of joke.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the name of the game. You know, as an audience member, as somebody who enjoys comedy, I understand that there's going to be a lot of, like, you know, platitudes and trite examples of the human condition. But it's your take on it. It's absolutely 100% your take on it, and that is the art.
Right.
But the reason I brought up the question is because, you know, there's, you know, you have examples like vaudeville. Vaudeville is not really art to me. You know, that time that pre-comedy, that pre-stand-up time, where it was just like a showman. You know,
it was more kind of performance based.
Yeah, it was like that's showing up, punching the clock, doing your job, and getting the fuck off stage.
Yeah,
and that's not putting yourself out there.
No, I mean, there's definitely a market for it. I'm sure there's comics who, you know, go up and do their jokes about why men don't ask for directions and stuff like that. Right. And that's fine. There's a market for it, and if you can get paid to do it,
appeals to a certain market.
But I don't think you are really you can't make yourself a good comic until you learn how to be yourself and have a voice,
right,
and express yourself.
Some people are learning that lesson way too late. You see that even today, that sitcoms are still a presence on television. It's like, not that I haven't seen a good one, but it's been a long time. You know what I mean? Like that construct of a sitcom just does not lend itself to a natural kind of comedy. And I think that's what people are really kind of gravitating towards right now, is a natural based organic comedy that comes from real life, real people, real experiences, real personalities.
I agree. And I think that's why Denver is doing so well, because there are so many unique individuals.
Well,
in
we're
the
not
scene.
Tainted.
No, we're not tainted. The scene here is not oversaturated. Everybody has their own unique voice, and everybody is doing incredibly well for each other, for themselves.
Yeah.
At least I think so.
There does seem to be a huge sense of community.
There is.
Oh, yeah.
That's one thing that, you know, it seems to be really... The industry here seems to be really on the side of the comedian, as opposed to, you know, the status quo of, like, you know, put asses in the seats. You know, it seems to be more comic based, like, you know, really helpful, because everybody seems to want to help each other.
Absolutely.
I think, unfortunately, though, a lot of that has to do with this seems like kind of like a training ground for comedians. This is kind of like boot camp. You know what I mean? And
in a sense.
And currently, you're not going to go anywhere unless you're out in one of the larger markets. And that's just how it is. But we're getting there.
The internet's there. There's a few of us who have been pushed over the edge. Like, I know, I'm good friends with a comic who, he worked out in L.A. for a very long time. He was a warm-up guy on a popular talk show. He wrote for sitcoms. Mm-hmm. And he eventually got sick of it. And he's like, I'm going to move to Denver because I have a voice there. Mm-hmm. I'll be able to be myself there. And he is one of the most popular comics in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So it works.
For you, though, do you see your own trajectory? I mean, because we're removed here from, you know, like your LAs and your New Yorks and your, you know, other places that have kind of their own built-in industry, do you feel like that there's going to have to be a huge jump? Or do you think that, you know, you can transition a little bit more smoothly here in Denver? Or will you have to make, like, that big leap to, like, an L.A. or a New York or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I'd ever want to move to an L.A. or New York for stand-up alone, because I don't want to be the person going out to a big city and trying to make it and then nothing happens. I know a few comics who've moved away from Colorado for exactly that, and then had to come back because they were chewed up and spit out.
Yeah, and why crush at a, you know, a Caroline's if the whole point is to crush? I mean, unless you're trying to go out for a TV show or something.
Yeah, like that. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there are certainly reasons and probably opportunities, but I don't know. That's not necessarily for me. I have to take a different route.
Mm. Me too. I'm kind of in that same boat. Where, like, I can't pick up and move to LA.
Oh no.
I gotta do it here, man. Dude. We discussed it. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Yeah, that was conversational.
Yeah. Okay.
That's fine.
Well, some douchebag listening to this is going to pick on the, you're an asshole. And she said exactly don't do that.
Oh, yeah. That's always fun. There was, I did this article for a gay magazine a few months ago, and the first half of the article referred to me as a he, and the second half referred to me as a she, and there's a whole list of comments saying, I don't think that Jordan appreciates being called a he. I was like, no, I understand the writer's position, because he was trying to, you know, paint
right,
a picture.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, in case anybody listening to this is pissed off, shut up. Jordan and I are friends, and that she's not offended. It's all good.
That's fine.
Go fuck yourself.
At what point did you identify as, you know, a she versus...
Mentally, always, physically, the instant I came out.
Well, so to other people, it was like, I'm coming out to you, and I'm proclaiming that I am this person. And so, was that hard for other people to do? I mean, is it just like
it's
more
incredibly
of a,
hard? It still is. I have a lot of friends who slip occasionally, and I, like I mentioned earlier, I try not to mention it, but generally they're pretty good about catching themselves and are incredibly apologetic and say, you don't have to apologize that much. I understand it's hard. For me, it's easy to call myself a she, but for other people, I understand it's difficult. Right. But when I started living full time as a woman, and people still, you know, called me he, that's, I don't know, it gets under your skin, but it is what it is.
How important are gender identifiers to you? I mean, what does it mean to be, you know, identified this way versus that way?
I much rather be referred to as a female. And
no, but I mean, I guess what I mean is, what weight does it carry to be transgender versus, you know, somebody who's not, versus a straight person versus a gay person? I mean, what weight does that carry for you? I mean, you carry around the title, but you know, to a lot of people, you know, it's like, well, you know, who are you underneath? So I guess I'm asking, what is that, for a lack of better words, superficial layer that is gender for you?
That's a difficult question. Ah, boy.
I'm completely confused right now with that question.
I guess it's kind of liberating because I've always felt female in a sense, and now that I can express it, and when people refer to me as female, I'm like, that's right, that's who I am.
Right.
And that is incredibly satisfying, as opposed to when I was living as a male and people, you know, referred to me as male. I was like, that's not right. I don't like being called a male, but I understand why I have to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, it's not like I'm 6'2 and 200 pounds.
Fortunately, right?
Yeah, I kind of lucked out in that category.
So, with you doing stand-up, you're oftentimes in the public eye.
I actually almost quit stand-up when I came out.
Really?
Because I was petrified. Like, I didn't want the scene to reject me. I didn't want, like... I was really afraid for my safety. Like, I don't want to go to some little shit bar in whatever Commerce City or some industrial little low-income town. That sounds terrible. But, like, like the riskier parts of the city, like, do a show out there. I didn't want to, you know, do a show and do my whole transgender routine and have somebody shoot or rape me in the parking lot on the way to my car. And it still frightens me. Like, if I go somewhere in the dark, it scares me. But you just kind of, you have to face that fear, because I feel so strong and I want to make people understand that, you know, transgender people aren't perverts, we're not freaks or whatever, we're normal people. And that's what I try to get across in my act, through humor, so people see, you know, there's a lighter side to it, but this is a serious thing. It's a real thing. So hopefully that happens in my act.
I think it does. Watching you tell jokes. You know what? Honestly, from, you know, I've only been doing this almost 2 years, you know, and you and I have had conversations of like, hey, Jordan, what did you think of that joke? And like, what do you think of kind of the progression of where I'm going and that kind of stuff, you know, asking you for guidance and why not? Mm-hmm. And you've been not only encouraging to me, but inspirational to me in the sense that you allow yourself to be sincere with the audience.
Exactly, and that took me a very long time to learn.
You're cute and silly about it, you know, but you're sincere with them, and that's made me feel more comfortable kind of being sincere about like where I'm coming from and the way that I interpret the world and kind of sharing that with crowds.
Absolutely, and I think that's kind of what you have to do with stand-up. I'm sure, you know, Bill Hicks had his opinions about things, and I'm sure he wasn't popular with a lot of people, but that's what he did, and he got to where he was because of it.
Yeah.
And I you know, being yourself on stage, no matter if you're doing a show for 5 people or doing an A club for 200 people, mm-hmm. as long as you can express yourself, that's where I think most people need to go, or where most people are at.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
No, that totally does. There has to be a sincerity and a purity to your to what you're doing. Otherwise, mm-hmm. people are going to know you're full of shit. It's fucked. That mob mentality is crazy.
Oh yeah,
like, it's fucking intense when you get up there and you don't believe in what you're saying. They pick up on that instantly.
Yeah, exactly. And then they'll eat you alive. I struggle with that for a very long time, and it was hard.
It's fucking scary.
Yeah.
You learn real quick though. Don't do that.
No, nope.
Like, don't say something just because you think the crowd's gonna find it funny.
Yeah.
Because if they don't, or if they smell your bullshit, mm-hmm. like they're gonna turn on you real quick.
Yep.
Exactly. And then you're just talking to 200 people with their arms crossed, just waiting for you to get off the stage.
I know. I hate when that happens.
Well, you know, it feels disingenuous. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a way to go about it where you can craft a joke and it can be complete and utter bullshit, but it can be the funniest thing you've ever heard. I mean, Mitch Hedberg was king of that.
Oh, yeah.
He was able to just, like, be so outright goofy and silly and...
He wrote some silly jokes, but he was himself while he was doing it.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, he put it forth in his own personality. And he put his own little twist on it. But, like Brad said, I mean, you can smell that on stage. When somebody's trying to be insincere but playing off as being sincere,
it just
sounds gross. It sounds really like, I can, yeah, that's a bit. Yeah, okay, I see it as a bit, but you don't suspend your disbelief as much.
Oh, no, like I have a lot of jokes that aren't true, mm-hmm. but because I'm sincere about who I am on stage, I can pull it off. Like, I have a joke about coming out to my parents on Christmas. I didn't come out to them on Christmas. I came out to them in November at a bar.
Right.
It didn't happen, but, you know, people believe it, and I get people coming up to me after a set and be like, you really came out on Christmas?
Well, no, it's because it's for the sake of crafting a joke.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not for the sake of, like, putting you in a certain light or making people believe something about you. It's for the sake of your job.
Mm-hmm. So where's kind of your career at now?
It's getting pretty good. I try to book myself as much as I can, and thankfully the last year and a half I've gotten some attention and a little bit of press, and some of the people I work with can, you know, throw my name around, which greatly helps. Like, I don't know, like 2-3 years ago, if you would have told me I'd be on, you know, Westward Artopia, I would have called bullshit.
Yeah, I
saw
that. You were Westward's top transgender comedian for 2013.
Yeah, which I had no idea what happened. I didn't think competition for that category was at...
Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't know that.
Is there only one?
Yeah.
You know, there's a few. Congratulations, though. Like,
Thank you.
That's cool. You know, those are... That's.
I hope that didn't cause any discontent with my trans comedian brothers and sisters, but... I was very flat. I had no idea that was going to happen. I woke up to a tweet at 3:00 in the morning saying, hey, congratulations. I said, what the hell are you talking about? And then I picked up a Westward. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. Cool.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah, so that was amazing. And whoever submitted, I think I have a good idea of who it was, but thank you, person who I'm not going to name because I don't want to be wrong.
And you and Chuck Roy and a couple other people are starting like a sketch show, right? Like a live
comedy
kind of showcase thing.
We're in a group called Altered Shtick, and it's an LGBT oriented comedy group, and we started doing shows last October. We did a monthly show. The venue who was hosting us unfortunately closed down, so we're without a venue right now. But
did that place close?
Yeah, they closed.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
I thought that they just weren't getting enough response from the comedy show, and so it wasn't a good fit.
No, well, they closed because they wanted to spend more time with their family and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Which is unfortunate, because I love that venue.
Right.
But, you know, I understand. So, we started out on... We did a show on National Coming Out Day, and then Chuck thought it'd be a good market for an LGBT kind of oriented show, so we started doing a monthly show that featured the four of us plus some of Denver's up and coming comics, mm-hmm. and in between stand-up routines there'd be sketch comedy, and it was like, it was a show. It's not like where you go to some little comedy place and people just do their 7 to 10 minutes and get off stage. It was like a full production show. We had music beds and whole nine yards. And well, once the ball gets rolling again, when we get a new venue, there's a few that we've been talking to. But once that gets going again, we have a lot of plans for it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I look forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
I like Chuck Roy, and I like his stand-up.
He's awesome. Yeah. I've seen him open up for a lot of people, and my God, he just kills it every time.
He's just a funny guy.
Oh, yeah, and it's completely humbling that I get to work with him in such close proximity as I do. Like, we were asked to perform at the Gold Rush Transgender Conference, which was it's an international conference. This was the 14th year they do it.
Denver?
And what's that?
In Denver?
In Denver, yep. Every year for 14 years. Big, huge conference. All the top surgeons and doctors and keynote speakers and everyone came.
Damn, that's inclusive.
Yeah, it was. And we were the Saturday night entertainment closing night after the big fancy dinner and all that stuff. And it was very rewarding. I was petrified to do it because I'd never performed in front of a largely transgender crowd. Mm-hmm. So my act is trying to educate people about it. So I didn't know how that was going to go over in people that already know everything. Sure. So
how'd it go?
It went really well. It was one of the best shows I've ever done.
Good.
Yeah, so it was very nice, and we look forward to doing it again, if they ask us.
Hopefully they do.
Hopefully they do. A couple of our comics were a little blue, so I don't know if that went over
too well.
They
don't like blue comics?
They weren't very responsive to them. Like, I tried to clean up my act a little bit. But a couple of the other comics, they're like, I don't give a fuck, I'm just gonna do my set. And
so there are kids in the audience and stuff?
No, there weren't. Oh. There were a lot of older people, though.
Huh.
Oh, it is so weird talking about your dick in front of kids. Like, when kids just happen to be there at a bar or something, and you look over and you're like, oh shit, I didn't know there was a kid there.
Exactly.
That happened to me last Sunday.
I can do clean, but I mean, it's hard to be a transgender comic and not talk about getting rid of your dick.
I say, why is there a child in a bar?
That's what at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, no less.
Yeah, maybe your parenting should be called into question.
Oh, yeah, right? Like, I have a show booked next month at a church.
Oh,
I've never done a church before, and I'm a little worried about it.
You know what? I've emceeded a church event.
Oh, really?
It wasn't bad. Like, as long as you take out these sexual innuendos that are blatant,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? So kids won't get it.
Yeah.
And take out the cursing. Like, they actually thoroughly enjoyed it. That was the first 15-minute clean set that I ever did.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Good. It's rewarding to do that. Like, I didn't think I could work clean, but I did some show a while ago where I did 10 clean minutes, and it went over pretty well. And the Gold Rush Conference, I stayed relatively clean, and it went pretty well.
Yeah.
And now I'm at a church, and I just hope I don't get struck by lightning when I walk through the door.
I think you'll be fine.
I think I'll be fine.
I'm pretty sure there's nobody manning.
Well, I hope the lightning machine. Like a 1 o'clock in the afternoon set. Keep it PG-13. I'm like, it's a church. I'm gonna keep it G.
Right? For God.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep it G for God. I thought this was cool. I was reading your bio and I saw that you're doing a documentary.
Yes.
On kind of your metamorphosis.
Yeah, yeah. I it's a documentary called Transmedian, which I started filming like a month or two after I started living full time as a woman. And unfortunately, I haven't filmed a lot recently because I don't have a camera crew.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I'll probably be working on until I have the big surgery. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea when it's going to come out. So it's a work in progress so far. But it's getting some attention.
Good.
Which I appreciate. I have a producer interested and a distribution company interested. I just have to show them some footage first, which I have to kind of get on.
I look forward to seeing that.
Yeah, thank you.
I think that'll be interesting.
Gotta be intense.
You have a story that oftentimes doesn't get told.
Yeah.
You know, and there's I have no idea, you know, what the population of transgender people are, especially like kids.
Yeah.
That there's got to be thousands. You know.
There's a lot.
There's got to be a
there's
lot.
There's a lot.
And I don't know if it's millions or, you know what I mean. Probably I don't want to speak in hyperbole, but
there's quite a few.
And oftentimes people, like you said, have misconceptions about what it is to be transgender, and and kind of I had a lot of misconceptions, you know, kind of coming into this, but I feel like I've learned a lot, you know, and so it's good that you're.
It's probably you don't see too many of us in the public eye. Mm-mm. Unless it's on like Maury Povich or Jerry Springer. I only know of one other transgender person who's coming out in the public eye, and it is a very public eye because she's in a very popular band. And I know she goes through hell.
Who's that?
The singer for Against Me.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Laura.
I heard about that.
Yeah. And I mean, like I had an article in Out Front, but she had an article in Rolling Stone. So it was a little bit different. So, yeah. But I mean, it's in a sense the same thing, like very public eye.
But I think that's good. That's a really positive thing, because it just recently, it's okay to be gay. Like in the last what, 5-10 years maybe? Like it's okay now to be gay.
Right.
And now this is kinda, it seems like just the logical next step. Like it's just a continuation of accepting people for who they are.
Exactly.
And that there's no reason to judge another human being for who they are.
Right.
As long as they're not a sociopath, you know, lighting cats on fire, it's all good, you know?
Yeah, you know? A few bad apples spoil a bunch, but
sure.
We're not all crazy.
What has been the biggest change externally? I mean, besides yourself, what has your experience been? I mean, what's been the biggest, like, you know, change that, you know, it's kind of been different from what you're used to?
Before I came out, I could blend in a lot. I mean, like when I first came out, it was very difficult for me to pass as a woman because I didn't look like one. I wore this horrible wig. I had fake boobs. I wore pads, and I didn't know how to do makeup. I didn't know how to dress, and it was very, very obvious. And that was incredibly difficult. Even like going to a gas station and talking to people, because it makes people feel very awkward. But at this point, that's not too big of an issue. But when I first started, that was very hard. That was probably the most difficult.
Did you have like an archetypal woman figure in your head? Like, as did you kind of have a picture of the person you wanted to be, or did you just kind of like play around with, you know, I like this and I don't like that? You know, was it
kind of yes and no? Like I have definite influences, like it's hard to mesh everything together. Like I love Marilyn Monroe and Audrey Hepburn, but I also like Joan Jett and Lita Ford. Like, you know, you can see them covered in tattoos, so it's not like I'm gonna go out looking like Carol Burnett or something like that. But you know, with it's kind of similar to comedy, you have to find your voice. So I think, you know, I think I found my little style, if you will.
Was that something that took a while to hone, or?
It did, because, yeah, when I first came out, I didn't like going shopping for clothes, because I didn't know what fit me. I just kind of, like, go and be like, okay, this looks cool, I'm going to buy it, and then if it fits, whatever. Yeah. And a lot of my friends were giving me their hand-me-downs, like their old clothes they didn't want anymore. So I was wearing a lot of, you know, third-rate clothing and stuff that didn't fit, and oh, it was terrible.
It's like going through puberty all over again.
Yeah, second puberty. Yeah, not to mention the hormones too. So
oh, that's, fuck that.
Yeah, second puberty.
Yeah, that's courageous. I don't think I would want to do that. Mm. But I'm kind of lazy. I'd probably be like, eh, fuck it.
Yeah, whatever. You got to be lazy. You just kind of
here's where I'm at.
Let them do their thing, and it's ridiculous.
As far as something I like to do is kind of see how you view the world, like kind of what your. And I kind of warned you that something like this was coming.
That's fine.
Kind of like, do you have any words of inspiration that you can offer towards people that may be kind of experiencing the same path that you had to go through, and that kind of thing?
I would say, be yourself and don't be afraid. You are going to run into some people that don't agree with you, and you have to develop a very thick skin.
Yeah.
When it happens, and for some people that can be very difficult, and for some people it's easy, but it's something you will have to face, and you have to be strong to do it, and just be yourself, and if you can genuinely be yourself, you will be happy.
Yeah, and I think something that's really important to be able to be yourself and be happy is to not base your own value, you know, the way that you value yourself on the opinions of other people.
Exactly.
Like, you have to know yourself well enough to be able to love yourself, and then it won't matter, you know, what other people are judging you, because ultimately you can look in that mirror and say, you know what, I love you.
Yeah, but my God, how do you make the jump from, you know, accepting yourself and loving yourself and being out there and open as who you are to... I'm going to actively seek judgment from strangers on a daily basis on a stage with lights on me. How does that jump? Like, how does that happen?
That was difficult. Like I mentioned earlier, I thought about quitting
comedy
because I was afraid of people judging me based on my lifestyle choice. And yes, people do judge me. I've done quite a few shows where I've heard audible ews and get off the stage and fag and stuff like that. But I'm addicted to the stage, so I couldn't do it, and I certainly couldn't go back to my material about being married and women and stuff like that. So
it might be kind of funny if you did it, though.
If you would be fun, yeah. If I did like a rewind of
knowing what you know now, just, kind of twist.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have anything that you want to plug?
Let's see. You can look at my website, transmediancomedy.com. I am also on Twitter at Jordan Comedy, and every other social networking site, because I'm an internet whore. I'm an iHorror. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Vine, Pinterest. I'm everywhere on the internet, and it's ridiculous. Let's see. I'm also next month, on May 10th, I will be at Amante in Boulder. May 13th, I'm at Herman's Hideaway. May 15th, I'm at Blush and Blue. May 18th, I'm in Fort Collins at the Plymouth Congregational Church. And May 24th, I'm at Stardust in Aurora.
Busy.
Yeah.
Good God.
Good for you.
I try.
Good for you. I wish I was busy. Well, good. And I want to thank you for coming and shedding some light on.
Thank you for having me.
You are, ladies and gentlemen. You can find me on Twitter at Bradley Comedian. Am I Bradley Comedian on Twitter?
I think you're Bradley Haltom.
I'm at Bradley Haltom on Twitter. I don't put a lot of emphasis on social media, even though I probably should, because that's kind of the
get
way
on
of the
it.
World.
That's the new thing,
that's,
man.
That's where we're at, right?
Yep.
Especially in this fucking industry.
Yep.
If you don't have a strong social media presence, you ain't shit.
Yep.
So,
sad but true.
And then I think we may make a dedicated Facebook page to the podcast, because people are annoyed with me for constantly posting things. And I think pretty much everybody just kind of ignores my Facebook page now.
Oh, everybody ignores everybody's Facebook page.
I don't. I look I actually look at other people's comments and stuff.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, but well, because I care.
Yeah,
I genuinely care how people are doing. So it is a lot to ask for, because we're all so busy.
Yeah,
that's just how life works. But
we're also cynical.
Yep, we are cynical. But I want to thank you guys for listening, and thank you, Micah, for letting us come to your
place.
Thank
you, Micah.
Hey, new friends and good times and.
Beers. Yeah. Tim Chutzpah.
Man, that clipped like fucking crazy.
I apologize. Anybody who's wearing headphones right now, I'm really sorry about that.
Well, they can't hear your apology now, so. Mm. thank you for listening. Please tell your friends about the podcast, and please leave comments. And we look forward to hearing from you, and thank you so much for listening. We love you, bitches, and you guys have an enjoyable day, and we'll talk to you next week. Next week, we have Reverend Rick coming on, who is he's a local reverend. He's kind of eccentric. He's a little weird. But
guard your buttholes, Brad.
My butthole's always guarded, sir. it should be a fun conversation, so be sure to tune in, and we'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Fourth year freshman!
Fourth year freshman forever!
I'm sorry.